Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am just so delighted to welcome people here tonight for what I know is going to be an incredibly unique, heartfelt conversation in quite a diversely thinking way about racism in this country and in the world in general, and how that relates more universally as well. Tonight I have on this show Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Michael has a very unique perspective. He is an anti-racism trainer who has received presidential recognition in the past. He also combines this with being a frequent guest on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens program. And he has explored some very important concepts in that area through his book, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. He is an active Unitarian Universalist minister, and he has had a real depth of experience that provides tremendous insight and perspective to not only this question of what is it like to live as a person of color in the United States, and just what are we missing, perhaps, in the conversation about that? How can we open our eyes? And I'll tell you that this show came out of a conversation that I had with Michael on the phone that I realized was opening my eyes. And I see that there is a conversation on race going on throughout America right now. And it's on conservative channels, and it's in liberal outlets. It's everywhere. And everyone is trying to come to terms with what can be a challenging topic to completely understand. And so that's why we're here tonight, to open our eyes and see alternative perspectives and really broad perspectives on this topic. I do invite you to call the show. Actually, I'm going to put out the call-in number tonight. If anyone has questions, we may take callers later. That call-in number is 310-807-5104. And without further delay, I am so delighted to bring back on the show Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Welcome back, Michael. It's so nice to have you here.
Hey, Susan. It's always a pleasure. Glad to hear your voice. I've been keeping up with your post. I told myself I got to get off of Facebook, man. I'm like addicted to it. And then I get on and I see some wonderful posts and I just say, well, maybe I'll get off of it tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, I know. Well, I enjoy your posts. I enjoy so much the inspiring things that are on Facebook.
It can be very rich, yeah. And then sometimes it can be like, oh, my God, what? That's another 20 minutes of my life I won't get back.
Well, I think we all need to be mindful of that because it can be. It can really eat up all your time, and you think, where did it go? And
it's
here and there, you know, where you just stop by to check it, and it does. It becomes a time sink. But anyway, I've certainly enjoyed our interaction there because, you know, some of the things that you have shared there have actually been on this topic, and there are a number of articles floating around on Facebook and on the internet that I've been paying attention to. And I think how do you feel, Michael, about the dialogue that's going on right now in this country? What are you observing from your perspective?
Well, first of all, today is 51 years ago today, Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech.
Oh, how!
And a lot of change since the August 28th, 1963.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and a lot has changed and a lot hasn't. And I'm glad that I'm always glad. I think Americans talk about race all the time, but in subtle ways. And so it's not that we don't talk about it. It's probably that we don't talk about it as openly as we can sometimes with each other. We may get in our own little tribes and what have you. I mean, I'm glad that we're talking about it. What's sad is that there's a tragedy, and then we talk about it, and then we kind of go back to our way of life until the next tragedy happens. Because believe me, it will happen again. I mean, it's happening all the time. Speaking specifically about what happened to Brother Brown, you know, I read some things on social media, and it's like, okay, whether he stole, you know, cigars or whether he didn't, it's not a death sentence, you know. And sometimes I'm appalled at what I hear and see. And I'm not saying that communities of color are paragons of virtue, but you know, there is they're just two different ways of living in America, probably more than that. And we have to come to grips with it. So the short answer is I'm glad it's a dialogue. I'm sorry that it always has to be after a tragedy, but maybe that's how we will learn. I don't know. I just also want to make sure that people realize that race is obviously a social construct. There's no such thing as race. But like many things, you know, quantum physics tells us that what we focus on, we create. And so we started to believe the lie ourselves that we're really these separate from each other. But I want to put that out there that this is scientifically proven. Not that I needed a scientist to tell me that. I always knew that somehow. But this is a construct. This is something that human beings have made to separate us from each other.
Yes, so true. Now something that you and I had discussed just in our conversation, which really made me think, is that I think that there may be some different definitions or confusion between prejudice versus racism. And you opened my eyes on that. And I wonder if you could do that for the audience as well. Define the differences.
Okay. And for brothers and sisters in the audience, you don't have to agree with it, please. But I just want you to just try it on for size. You know, because in order for us, you know, to agree that there's a problem and in order for us to do something about the problem, we all have to agree that there is a problem. And so many times in our country, we have looked at racism as the skinhead brother who, you know, may be in New Mexico or wherever, you know, the demographics are, that there are many brothers who are skinheads, brothers and sisters, or it's the individual person who's a Ku Klux Klan member, or, you know, it's the individual. And we're not talking about that. That's prejudiced. We are all prejudiced. Black, white, rich, poor, gay, we all have our personal biases and our own preferences. Racism, see, what we don't talk about is power. And racism is prejudice plus power. In other words, if I did not like white, Caucasian, bro, I don't know what we call each other now. White, we call each other so many things. White, Caucasian, European American, whatever you want to call it. I could be prejudiced against you. But I don't have the power to enforce my prejudices. I don't have a military. I don't have a police department. I don't have, access to the halls of political power to keep you from certain neighborhoods, to keep you from getting certain loans, to keep you. That, there's a power dynamic. So for me, the definition of racism is prejudice plus power equals racism. And so when I hear, now it's when I hear, how can I put it? So in other words, in America, now we're not talking about Africa, we're not talking about Europe, talking about the continental United States, the only people that have that kind of power for now, regardless of having an African-American president, is what we would call the white American. And so there is no such thing as reverse racism because black people, even if they wanted to, people of color, Native American people, Latino, we don't have the power to enforce it. And that in itself, that's where we get to the nitty-gritty, and we don't want to talk about power. Now, that's a hard sell because then we're talking about white privilege, and white brothers and sisters bristle about that, especially if they're poor. But the country was founded on it. The country, our founding fathers were white male landowners, and white women and people of color were second-class citizens. And so the country was founded on this. And I've had poor white brothers and sisters tell me, well, I may be poor, but at least I'm not a nigger. So even they know that the skin color, doors will open that won't necessarily open for me. Now, that's A. B is this. Privilege is fluid. Okay? And what do I mean by that? Let's look at a relationship. Sometimes my wife has privileges. Oh, I'll put it to you like this. I have privileges over my wife because I'm a heterosexual male. But many times she has privileges over me because she's a white woman. That's just the society that we live in. In a relationship, whether it's a male, gay, straight, nations, if the power is fluid, sometimes I have it, sometimes you have it, then you have a healthy dynamic. But when power is always in the hand of one individual, one nation, one group of people, then you have dysfunction. And white privilege is a difficult concept for many white Americans to accept because they've been taught that they've gotten the things that they've gotten because of their own hard work, because of their own industry, but a lot of times they're standing on the shoulders of other people, and many times those people happen to be people of color. And in a world and in a country that is rapidly changing, the demographic, they're saying 2015, it's sooner than that, this country will be predominantly folk of color, and that is a very scary prospect. For a lot of people who are in power, they want to keep power, a lot of white people who just came up in a different era. And it's very scary that the world that they, it's not 1950 anymore. And this is not to say that if people of color had their druthers, that we would be great rulers of the world and more fair and equitable. We don't know that. I mean, you know how human beings can be. But right now we know that we don't have that power, and so that power lies in the hands of the dominant culture, which right now in 2014 on August 28th is the European American. And most of that is the straight white male. And we carry this into our extraterrestrial relations, if we can even call it that, because many of these brothers and sisters are very strange looking. Some of them aren't, but some of them can be. And anything that's the other, we will destroy because we don't understand it. And we see it subtly. And of late, this past year, I started having contacts with more human-looking brothers and sisters, but they're very, you know, white-skinned. Some of them have blonde hair, and in the UFO community, and I talk about it a bit in my first book, you know, well, they look like us. They're the good ones. They're the benevolent ones. They're blonde,
yes,
blue
I've
eyes.
Heard that. I have heard
you know,
that.
They don't look like me.
Absolutely.
They, you know,
uh-huh.
Yeah, the darker skin, the grays, oh, they're just so evil. The Syrians, oh, because they're more brown skinned, oh, they're just so evil. But our Nordic, they're Nordics, oh, they just want peace and brotherhood. And so far it looks like they do. But even subtly, because they look like us. Well, I'm not included in that.
Yeah.
And, and it may be conscious or unconscious. So I call it intergalactic racism. But we take our habits and our fears, because that's all it is fear. And wherever you go, there you are.
Yes. Now, I will say, I'm sure there are people out in the audience that are saying, what in the heck is he talking about? That, you know,
how
do we know about these races? But you know, I want to say something here. Okay, you know, in the show tonight, we're not going to be able to present, you know, the different things that I know you've studied and others have studied, and there's a diversity of opinion on it. But let's just look at it even theoretically, that if we can't handle our differences on this planet, and given all the planets that are being discovered in the universe right now and how we now know, you know, through traditional, putting in quotes, science, that it's very likely, you know, it's not only very likely, it's silly to believe that there wouldn't be a diversity of life. And so...
Oh, there is.
How?
There
and
is.
Yes,
we know that
you've
now.
Studied it. Well, and I'm just
I've
talking to the people out there who are saying,
yeah,
what the
I've
heck
seen,
are you talking about?
I've seen
about,
the diversity,
you know,
of life. Yeah.
But the thing is with racism, Michael, I mean, and just not so much, and even prejudice, now that comes into play here, is how, you know, how in the world are we going to broaden our perspective if we can't even accept the other, like you're saying, here on this planet? What can we do?
Well, first of all, I think we are making progress, and I'll give an example. You know, let's be honest. We have a man of color's president. We may never have another man of color's president, but come on, this country has come a long way with that. We may have a woman as president in our lifetimes, okay? So that's progress. That doesn't mean that we all sing Kumbaya, but come on, this was unthinkable. Okay, human evolution is slow. I'll give you another example. White privilege is white privilege. But now we're talking about, I'm talking about people like myself and other anti-racism trainers, other diversity trainers, where we are, what I just said to you 3 minutes ago about privilege being fluid, that's not even talked about. My next door neighbor is a brilliant man.
Uh-huh.
He is an alcoholic. He is the stereotype of Appalachian men. You know, his teeth have come out. He's not educated as far as academia would be concerned. And he's my good friend. I'm not going to mention his name. But now, I, as a man of color, have privileges over him.
Yes.
Not so much racially, because doors open for Mike, and he and I have talked about that.
Yes.
But I'm educated. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I make more money than Michael. I won't tell you his last name. I can walk in places that Michael can't walk. Michael drives a truck for a living. He delivers things from state to state. Michael can take apart any computer you have and put it back together again. Okay? I mean, this is what just as a hobby. Okay? As a hobby,
yeah.
He does this. He is the salt of the earth. He and I hit it off when I first moved there. And we're still very good friends. Now, Michael is a white male. Michael probably has more in common with me than he probably has with the newscasters on Fox News, these conservative and liberal white males who are running our country.
Yes.
Because they look down on Mike.
Okay? Yes.
Now
yes,
we're talking about classism.
They will.
Now we're talking about classism.
Absolutely.
Okay? So mm-hmm. But privilege, now maybe 50 years ago, I wouldn't have that privileges over Mike because I may have not been able to get the education that I needed because of race or any number of crazy things that could have happened. So we're starting to see I have privileges over you because I'm built differently and I happen to be heterosexual. I have privileges over gay, lesbian, transgendered, bisexual questioning, brothers and sisters, because I'm a straight man. So it's fluid, you see? It's not fluid enough, obviously, but the privilege can be fluid. But in America, the racial privileges are still in the hands of one group of people. Because not because people of color are so saintly and paragons of virtue, but there's the power. People of color, if white students were out there rioting after someone got shot, you're not going to see people of color coming out in Ferguson, New Jersey, and militarized police. We don't have the power and the glory and the authority for that. We don't have the power to say, you know what, I don't want those white folks in my neighborhood. I'm either going to flee or I'm just going to make it more difficult for them to move in. We don't have the power to do that. We don't have the power to back up our prejudices. Not saying we don't have them. And that's where the white privilege comes in and the power dynamic. Very different from, someone calling me a nigger or, you know, beating me up. It's very different. We're talking about institutions, our fire departments, our churches. The only authentic place that really racism hasn't crept into anymore because our military services aren't segregated anymore. And see, in a hierarchy like that, you know, if I'm on patrol right now or if I'm on a SEAL team somewhere, you know, I don't care what color you are because you got to cover my butt because it's only five of us out here.
Yeah.
Okay? So in that kind of situation, you know, you forget about all that mess. Or at least you do until you get back home. But the world is not run like a military a mentality. And so I had friends who fought in Vietnam. And they fought with people who they know they didn't like them. Southern white brothers and northern, you know, urban African American, you know, there are. But at least while they were on their patrol, my life depends on you. So we got to put that shit away until we get back. Pardon my language, to the base camp.
That's all right.
We don't have time for that. But that works in those type of situations. But in America, man, where we are now, in some ways, we're becoming more and more polarized. And it can get disconcerting. I hear people talking about race wars coming.
Yes, I have heard that, and certainly I find that really it's such an escalation of rhetoric to
it is
to talk
it, it
in
is
such
but
a
it's,
way.
It's rhetoric it's rhetoric
it's
though.
It's upsetting. And,
but it's disturbing,
and, you know, I
yeah.
like to see the world go the other direction. You know, something that you said, I think that this has surfaced as well, is the contrast. I mean, the images coming out of Ferguson were shocking. And one of the things that it did, it really did awaken in a more general way people to the militarization of the police forces. I think that we are seeing an erosion of our free speech rights in this country among all the races. I mean, it seems that although it was accentuated in this particular situation, I mean, when I saw that, though, Michael, it is true. Your words were echoing in my mind because we had talked even before this about power, and the way that it's exerted. And I think that a broader conversation now going on, not to divert from the racism that occurs in our country, is also just the way putting that much force into our local communities can be misused. And I think that, you know, in a perfect world in a perfect world, you wouldn't need it. I know there's a huge debate over whether it will keep us safe in certain situations, and yet history is filled with examples of the dangers of this and how it could affect all of us and then divide us, too, at the same time. It just seems like it's both. It continues. It makes the divisiveness even worse when everyone's afraid.
Yeah, because the fear just spreads. I was thinking about that today, and this is just Michael's stuff. So, listening audience,
no, you
please
go right
just
ahead.
Say, no. But you know, we're hearing these reports of Americans going to fight in Syria. Now, I don't know if there's a lot. I mean, it's still sketchy, but I can see the media and the powers that be building this up. Because then what's going to happen is that there'll be more crackdowns because you don't know who's really for us and you don't know who's going to Syria. And if they're going to Syria, then they may come back. And if they come back, they may bring more terrorists with you. See where I'm going? They're making...
Yeah.
The argument, because then, well, we don't really know why they're going. We don't. They may be coming back here, and so in order to keep us safe, we may have to take away a few more of your privileges and rights.
Yeah,
it's for your own good.
It's an erosion.
It's for your yeah. Because some of these Americans are going back, and they may be bringing the Ebola virus back, and we're really going to have to crack down, but this is for your own good. And after a while, and that may be just my paranoia, I could be just crazy.
I don't think I am, but I could talk about.
And if we have martial law here, or if you get out of hand, black, white, rich, poor, gay, straight, well, it's not Mayberry anymore. We've got Jeeps and armor. I mean, these brothers look like they were in special forces somewhere. And so we can keep you. Don't make us have to use this, America. We're doing this for your own good. Now, some people say that's too far-fetched. I don't believe it is. I have brothers and sisters. I've lost friends to handgun violence. My brother was murdered. I'm not a violent man. I don't understand that mentality. But I can see why. I don't say I have to agree with it, but I can see why a lot of citizens say, Michael, our government can't be trusted anymore. And once they get all of your guns, then they can really do whatever they want. And we saw this in Germany. You know? And so I'm like, wow. Well, you know, you got a point. Now, I'm not saying that there may be other ways to do it, but yeah, what a wonderful way to keep down resistance by everybody just give up your weapons. Meanwhile, I give up my weapon and you roll down my street in a tank.
Well, it's a very complex argument because, you know, there are many who would say that, you know, having the guns on the street is causing a lot of problems as well. But I will say that, and this is why I have a tendency to hear both sides. I can hear both sides of this issue. And my concern is that if everyone was ethical, if power didn't corrupt, which we know it does,
Absolutely.
And if people didn't, you know, there's just putting that much power in the hands of people who are not necessarily trained. I saw criticisms of that from like military groups saying, people who had been in the military saying, we never would have done this or that. You know, it was just a misuse. And, you know, that's a concern. And then just the fact that the danger of unethical behavior. And, you know, I know some wonderful police officers, you know, that are just wonderful people and highly trained. So I'm not generalizing. It's just that we've gotten into a real mess in this country. I mean, I think it has everything to do with the theme of this show, because we have allowed fear to rule this country. And it started years and years ago. And I know a lot of people will say, well, there are all kinds of, you know, conspiracies behind this, that it was manufactured and all these things. I've heard all that as well. But what it comes right down to is it has everything to do with our relationship with fear. And also what we believe in terms of where is humanity going. I mean, I know you're a Unitarian Universalist minister, Michael. I'm a very optimistic person. I believe our country and our world is moving more in a higher consciousness direction, even though there's all this, I think all this darkness is being surfaced for us to even rise even faster. Sometimes challenges do that. But I wonder what you would say about that. Is that because, you know, we can have a tendency to just not have hope. You know, people can, I've heard so many hopeless expressions on radio recently, just awful. And yet so many of us believe. If you were raised a Christian, I was raised a very conservative Christian, you might see certain things if you were taught end times things, but still ultimately there is a belief that love prevails. And so I wonder what you would say to this in terms of spirituality. And we are being featured in prime time as number one in live spirituality, so we're definitely bringing in the spiritual audience tonight. So what can we say from a higher consciousness perspective?
Okay. I personally agree with you. It's just who I am. It's also my experience. I feel that we are evolving. It is a painful process. People who are afraid of the change will cling to the old paradigm as long as they can. Some will even leave this body physically clinging to that paradigm. And doesn't make them bad. It's fear. I believe that, yes, we are going through an evolution, a paradigm shift. What I try and do, and I just want to be clear that this is what's been working for Michael for the 57 years that I've been on planet Earth, is that I have to be the change, as Gandhi says, that I want to see in the world. And that's not always easy. And so if I want to see love, then I have to be love. If I want to see forgiveness, then I have to be forgiveness. Yeah. If I want to see community, then I have to be community. And that may, you may have to do that through tears sometimes. A friend of mine was telling me today, he is a man of color. He just moved, very educated, just moved here. His wife is white. They have two children, one on the way. He moved to this part of the country 8 months ago, and he bought some incense. It wasn't what he wanted. He took it back, and the guy, the owner, started going off. What am I supposed to do? Oh. And the guy had his little child there. And my friend responded, look, I'm just bringing this back. I will give you good business. Do you want my business? And the guy said, no. And it was interesting, and he was kind of, it bothered him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this was supposed to be a store about spirituality. And, you know, I just said, look, brother, it ain't always fair, but you were more spiritually evolved in that moment with him, and he's the owner of the store, than he was to you. Now, that may not make you feel better, but you'll get over it, and you'll just see that, you know, sometimes you're just going to have to take the high road. I mean, I'm very concerned, and I want to be an informed citizen about what's happening in Ukraine and what's happening, you know, around the globe in Syria and what have you. And I can send my thoughts and prayers there. I know I can't do anything about it, but that keeps me from being overwhelmed. So what do I do? Well, I try to keep my side of the street clean, as we say in the 12 steps, or I try to keep my aunt under the garden. And so I try to treat my brother and sister the way I want to be treated when I walk out my door in the morning. And my encounters with people, doesn't happen all the time, happens more often than not. And that's changing the world.
Yes.
One person at a time. But if you think you're here to save the world, or you think you'll burn out, you'll have compassion fatigue, you'll be bitter, and you may wind up dying alone. So, you know, if there's something you want to do, pick one or two things that you can do to make a difference and do that. But if you even just the way the vibration that you carry, the way you deal with people each day is, it raises the vibration of this planet. And so that's all you can do. My God, when Jesus, Rome was an empire like we are, and Rome was brutal.
Yes.
And Jesus couldn't save everybody. The poor you're going to have with you always, he says. He didn't march outside of Pilate's apartment going, no justice, no peace. And I'm not saying you shouldn't march, but he talked about an inner tool, an inner freedom, an inner kingdom that Caesar, whether Caesar is Obama, whether Caesar is going to be Hillary, whether Caesar is Pontius Pilate, that no one can take from you. And so that's a very powerful tool, and it's love. Gandhi brought down the British Empire, a little man with a diaper.
Yep.
A little brown man with a diaper. The Brit said, the sun will never go down on our empire. And Gandhi said, really? King brought us to our knees before he was killed, which is probably why he was killed.
Yes.
So there's other tools that you can use if you just tap into it and try to look at your fears. Because courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is going on despite the fear.
Well, and you see that too, Michael, is that's where we've failed in our society. I mean, we can, more of us need to embrace that, because that really is the key to keeping our society functional, as opposed to reactionary to everything in terms of, you know, power, all of our rights being taken away because of fear. That's not the answer, because ultimately history shows us we'll go the other direction. Although, honestly, I do believe, like you say, the more of us that respond in empathy to our neighbor, I think that I see that more and more. I'm seeing that even in terms of, you know, the economic situations that a lot of people have gone through. People who have never experienced any kind of hardship are experiencing it big time. I mean, many people have lost their homes, and I'm not trying to say that it's any, it's not making any comparisons between different groups, but I will say that it gives you a type of empathy that you never had before. Because,
well, it can and it can't. It doesn't have to.
Privilege.
Some people could become more bitter because of it. Life's
well,
not
you
fair.
Could.
Why
yes.
is this happening to me? So,
yes.
so, and it's really not even about that. It's about, and I don't mean this in a narcissistic way. It's really about you, because whether you get cremated or whether you get put in a coffin, only one person is getting in the box with you, and so you are responsible for your life. And that's what I feel is crucial. And so, because I know me, I'm more mystical in my paradigm, in my spirituality. I have friends who are activists. I have friends who will say, well, Michael, aren't you angry and aren't you this? And some people, especially back in the day, got mad at me because I didn't appear angry. I went through my angry phase, and I saw where it got me. It got me nothing. Now, unless I channeled it in the right way. Now, some of us are mystical. Some of us are activists. Some of us want to get out here and do stuff for the earth. Some of us want to do stuff around race. Everybody, as Paul says in Corinthians, everybody has a gift. And so some of us may be working inside the empire. Some of us may be working outside the empire. Some of us may be working in other areas. So, everybody has to interpret it the way they feel. Or they may say, Michael, that's a bunch of you-know-what, and that doesn't work for me. And that's okay. Everybody has a different way of doing things. And so, that's everybody's on their own path. And I'm only responsible for my path. And my path, Mark Twain said that the two most important days in a person's life is the day they're born and the day they find out why.
Yeah,
so once you find out why, then you can find out, okay, how can I make that difference? I choose, no matter what I'm going to choose to do, I'm going to do it with love.
Yeah.
Now, this is what Michael's going to do. And I'm not talking about let's all sing kumbaya and make pretend nothing's happening. No, there's plenty happening. But I'm going to do it where I am reverent and respectful of other life.
Yeah.
You see, okay. So I have the audacity to believe that that can be done. I have other people who say there's going to be a race war and I'm going to get my gun and if they shoot me, I'm going to shoot back. And I say, okay, brother. Okay, sister, that's where you are. I can't go that route with you. But if that's the way you feel, life will play that out for you. Life will play that out for you.
It seems it seems that too, certainly from the perspective of, occasionally I'll hear, I hear different perspectives just to understand where they're coming from, because one of the things I study, in fact, we may get into this a little bit too, is a lot of people right now are very focused on Christian end times scenarios because they were taught that and they very much believe that. And
yeah.
I see a lot of fear coming from those areas. And I know that I was taught a great deal in that area too, but for me, it has to do with managing your fear, and that comes up. You said something. You said just really made me think about that, in terms of the concepts that we may have been taught that may frighten us, in terms of the other, so much so. I mean, there's so many things as an individual, I personally can do to manage my fear. If I'm walking somewhere and I have some irrational fear that really isn't, sometimes you can put yourself in jeopardy, there's no question. Sometimes. But most of the time, a lot of the fears that we have of, quote, the other, that have been embedded somewhere, are irrational. And you just have to release them. And it takes a conscious choice on one's part to do this and respond in love.
Yeah. It's hard work.
It is.
Because, but that doesn't mean it's not doable. And it doesn't mean you have to do it all the time. We can all go through the past week, and if we're honest with ourselves, we can say, you know what, in that situation, I could have been better. But the thing is that, I was very heavy into Bible prophecy coming up. Hal Lindsey, the late great planet Earth and all
that. Yes.
I mean, I was almost obsessed with it. And I look at some of the things happening today, Ukraine, looking at Syria, and what's happening here in this country. And, hey, man, some part of me says, you know, Nostradamus was on to something. But I also know, you know, what's the Heisman uncertainty principle? That these are probabilities. They don't have to be. We have the wherewithal, if we choose to use it, to change these. These are probable futures. And, again, I mentioned quantum physics or metaphysics. What we focus on, we create. So if we want to focus on apocalyptic end times, well, guess what? That's what we're going to get back. But if we want to focus on hope and there's a way to change some of these issues here, then that's what we'll create. So we are co-creators of our own destiny. That's how powerful we are. That scares a lot of people. Because what do you mean? Only God can do that, yada, yada, yada. Well, Listen, gang, we are, if the kingdom of heaven is within you, and I take that very seriously, then I have power to say to this mountain, move, and it'll get up and move. The mountain of prejudice, the mountain of mediocrity, the mountain of fear, the mountain of let me get them before they get me. I believe that. I have the audacity to believe that. And so every end is a new beginning. Now, there may be the end of the world, may be the end of the world as we know it, but we know, like Einstein tells us, energy doesn't die, it just changes form.
Yes.
So every ending is a new beginning. But it's what we and I don't mean you have to be kumbaya. Let's all hold hands and we'll do the Course in Miracles and we'll just and that's not what the Course implies, because I'm a student of it and I don't want to be trite with it. But I am saying this, that if you want a world of pain and racism and all kinds of isms and upheaval, then keep focusing on it. If you want a world of harmonious relationships and peace, then focus your mind on that, because thoughts are things, and what we focus on, we create. It is done unto you as you believe.
You know, Michael, I have really, this has actually come up in conversations I've had with other people recently, and just if enough people on the planet are focused on a particular outcome, is it numbers that overrides or consciousness? I've really wondered about this, and I'll get really out there, although it's not that much so. Is it technically, if you listen to quantum physics and what I've heard on mainstream television shows, is there is a timeline, a parallel universe, for every possibility. So somewhere the end times scenario exists, or, you know, all these different scenarios. And I've heard such complex theories in terms of how even people think they can jump timelines depending on what they believe. That when I first got involved with some of this more higher consciousness thing, someone told me, you need to choose which planet you want to live on, as if there will be multiple ones, that somewhere, you know, some people are going to be living on a really dark planet, and that I get to choose based on the vibrational level of my consciousness and focus where I choose to be. And I see kind of I don't know what I think about that exactly, because I think sometimes things seem to contradict, you know, what we're thinking in terms of higher consciousness thoughts in a global sense.
Well, you know, listen, it doesn't really matter. When you get up in the morning, are you going to try and love somebody? Because if you are, it doesn't matter. If we get blown up tomorrow, wherever you go, your works go
that's
with
it.
You. And because we can
that
get caught up
it.
In the paralysis of analysis. And yes, you know, but to people in Gaza, getting blown up, people in Israel getting blown up. Do you think they're worried about higher consciousness right now? No, they're trying to survive.
Yeah.
They're trying to say, how am I going to get through this? And I'm not trying to be really disrespectful. Please don't hear that. But I know it's like in the UFO community. You know, do they fly with this propulsion system? Do they fly with that? That's wonderful. But guess what? Once you find that out, you got to get up in the morning and try to love somebody. You got to get up in the morning and hug your kids. You got to get up in the morning and deal with someone who doesn't like you and you don't like them. How are you going to do that now?
Yes.
That's where the rubber meets the road.
That is so powerful. We do.
That's where the rubber meets
the
road. In information, the paralysis of analysis. Yeah, you know what? I'll find out what planet I go to after I die. And if I can come back to you in a seance, I'll let you know. But right now, how am I going to do what I need to do tomorrow so I can lay down tomorrow night and say thank you for a beautiful day. Thank you for letting me be the person, or I'm the person I want to be. That's where I'm coming from. Because that's all that matters when it's all said and done. That's all that matters to me.
Yes.
I like talking about higher consciousness. I do try to live that way. But when it's all said and done, to the person with the Ebola virus, they don't have time for conversations about what planet I'm going to go on after I die. Can I create that? They're trying, can you love me through this? I'm scared.
I love that.
Can you help me?
Oh my God.
It doesn't, the other stuff doesn't matter because the empire, when we're dead and gone, this stuff will be going on. Heaven forbid I go out here tomorrow and get hit by a car or hit somebody or do something stupid or by accident. I don't want to be worried about what planet I'm going to go to. I want to be able to look back and go, you know what? I helped somebody.
I served
somebody. And you don't have to have ETs visiting you to do that. You don't have to have President Clinton say, you're a damn good anti-racism trainer to do that. All you got to do is get up tomorrow and say, that's what I'm going to be about. That's what I'm about.
You know, I so appreciate that.
And that's how the world changes.
Because, you know, even here, I don't have to have a radio show to do that. It's how, you know.
Well, you don't have to, but you're blessed with it.
I choose to.
You change consciousness.
Well,
you change consciousness.
I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm just saying that, you know, all of my focus can't be on what's this message that's going out into the world. It's on loving one another. How are we loving one another? And you know, it's the day-to-day things. And I'll tell you, Michael, on this show, I guess it was last year, I had a scientist from Israel, and she and I diverged from the talk of the science, and we got to talking about what it was like to be a mom in Israel. And it was amazing how, you know, even in places, she really expressed how they're able to live with their fear. And she didn't say anything that was controversial or anything like that. We were just talking about what it was like to be a mom and that, you know, it's the same. I mean, and how people, they move forward and they love each other and do the things in life that create beauty. And,
well, she wants the same thing for her child as the Palestinian sister wants for her child.
And I want to
too. That's it. That's it. And so, you know, as Rumi tells us, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you've built against it.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's such a powerful statement. And, you know, we do. We get very wrapped up in all these things, very complex. You know, and I know there are a lot of Christians listening right now because there are a lot of Christians on the spiritual channels at Blog Talk Radio. And you know, I come from that background, and I have, you know, a lot of family. And you know what? When we're all connecting, it's when we're focused on the love of God, I mean, that's where the focus is. And,
however
and,
you want
to
put it. However you want to put it. I mean, there's different ways to be Christian.
And the love between us.
Yeah, there's different ways to be Christian. You can be an atheist as long as you're focusing on love. And, again, it's not this kind of mushy, kind of let's all hold hands. It's this love. It's this reverence.
It's deeper.
For life. And for and that life is sacred. And you don't take it lightly. You don't trivialize it. You don't take drones and blow people up and take their oil and you don't do that.
Yes.
You don't do that. You don't shoot people no matter how scared you get and they don't have weapons. You don't blame white people for all the problems in your life. You don't blame gay people. You don't. I can do a litany here. That's not whether you're an atheist, whatever, you can still love. Whether you're a Christian or a Muslim, you can still love, but it's a very different love than what we're seeing here. You don't do regime change on people. You don't assassinate other people and then get mad when they try to assassinate you. You don't do that. That's not the love that the universe is talking about. Somehow, I don't think that's what Jesus and Buddha or Muhammad, that's not what they were talking about. I don't know for sure, but something tells me, man, they would say, boy, you guys got it wrong.
You know, Michael, as you're talking, there was a, you know, when I was growing up, we always used to watch this movie, Ben-Hur. And at the end of that movie, there's someone, he's very vindictive, his family was killed, and it was unjust, and, you know, it was the horrible, horrible things that happened. And he felt the message of love, and he says, I felt him, in this case, Jesus, take the sword out of my hand. And, you know, that has stayed with me all these years because if more of us could feel that personally, then we couldn't participate in the things that are creating all these problems because it wouldn't be consistent. And we would find other ways based in love to create harmony. And so, you know, that's what really comes to mind. And I know that we're heading into the last 3 minutes of the live show here. Isn't it just what we can go into overtime if you want?
I don't have anything. I have to be at the church tomorrow. Is that okay?
What it does? Oh yeah, here's what it does: is the live show does go down on the internet, but it continues in the recording. For the podcast, and anyone who wants to listen if we talk into overtime here, all they have to do is go to the teleconference line, which is 310-807-5104. So if you call that line right now and don't hit a 1 unless you want to talk to us, because that's if you want to actually come on the show.
Susan,
you
tell
can
them
listen.
One more time. You may do like they do in the commercials.
0, yes. 310-807-5104. We're going to talk for a little while longer. That's the teleconference line. This show is always a teleconference. All the Blog Talk radio shows are, just so you know, out there. And if you're not near a computer, you can listen. And then you'll be able to hear our continuing conversation. Or if you are leaving us, go to, since we only have a, should talk to the live audience that's leaving, because we will, I'm very thankful to Blog Talk Radio for featuring us as number one in spirituality tonight.
And if whoever's leaving, tell them to go in peace.
Yes, go in peace.
Go in peace. And thanks for taking time out to listen to me.
Yes.
I appreciate
it. And those of you who are leaving, you can always hear the rest of this broadcast by going to frontierbeyondfear.com, which is where all the shows are. And this one, it'll be at the same link. As soon as it's over, you'll be able to hear it. And Michael, just for those leaving, what is your website so that people know where to find you for those leaving the broadcast right now?
Yes, thanks. I forgot. MichaelJSCarter.com is my website. You can contact me there. My book, Alien Scriptures, you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's Nook and Kindle. It's like $4.99 on Nook and Kindle, $9.89 in paperback. Ancient Aliens Season 7 has begun. Episodes that I've taped would probably be on in September or October. So if you want, please tune in and let me know what you think.
Yes. Well, you're doing... Well, thank you, live audience, for being here tonight. We really appreciate you. And
yeah.
Those of you staying with us, we'll continue to talk a little bit, see where we continue to go. So... and I guess the live feed is now down. So now we're either talking to the podcast audience, and I always welcome those people who are listening to us in the future because they're with us. You know, I really feel the energy of people with us right now, anyone listening at any time. Because there are no boundaries of time, and we can feel you with us here.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we can continue this... Oh, go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
No. What you said was beautiful. It's true.
Oh, thank you.
And you're making a difference. I say this. No, I'm real. I say this because this is how you're getting people to listen. They may not even agree, but you're getting people to think another way. And even if they don't agree, they can call and say they don't agree. We don't have to think alike to love alike. Radio is a powerful medium. I don't have to tell you. And people, you know, on other planets, they get our broadcasts because they hear everything we send out, whether it's do this or do that or love or whatever. And this is very powerful. And so, this is how the world changes one person at a time.
Absolutely. I'm still feeling, you know, you have a way, Michael. I can only imagine what it's like in your church because, you know, you just made me just feel so wonderfully peaceful reflecting on the basics. You know, that is the key. I need to be reminded of it too. I am an analytical person, believe me. I can go on and on analyzing things.
Yeah.
And yet, coming back to what really matters, just loving one another, and how are we progressing in the world? What are we doing in our everyday life?
And that's what matters, at least from where I'm coming from. Because, see, in a highly technological age, you get away from a few things. You get away from yourself. What's his name? Marshall Van Summers talks about this in his Allies of Humanity, that in a highly technological civilization, which is where we're living, we get out of touch because we need more and more resources to supply the technology in order that we can make our lives more comfortable. So we can almost get more sterile and we can stay up in our heads. We can stay up in our heads. And so, but it's where your heart is. I mean, back in biblical days, when Yahweh, you know, the astronaut hardened Pharaoh's heart not to let the Israelites go, because the heart was what? The heart was the seat of the will. So it wasn't so much the brain. He didn't harden Pharaoh's brain. He hardened Pharaoh's heart. And that's where I had an Apache friend tell me one day, I was out in New Mexico, and we were complaining, you know, boy, I was complaining about being a person of color and how hard and, you know, and his land was stolen and I have Cherokee and me and African. And it was like a pity party. And then we snapped out of it, and he said, Michael, the longest journey you'll ever make is from here to here. And he pointed to his head and then to his heart. He said, that's the longest journey anyone will ever make. Not that you don't use your mind, but, you know, it's your heart that makes you human.
Yeah.
Your intellect doesn't make you human. In Weimar Germany, during the Holocaust, the greatest number of PhDs on planet Earth were from Germany. So they were smart enough. But they didn't have the good sense to say, you know, there's something wrong with making soap out of another human being. There's something wrong with gassing. There's something wrong with making a lampshade out of... But they had PhDs.
Yeah.
They were smart enough.
Yeah.
And so you can get caught up in what King calls the paralysis of analysis. And, you know, it's all in my head.
The heart. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and see, that's what happens. I mean, I see.
Look at what technology is doing.
I'm very concerned. I mean, I think that, you know, technology in the right place, it's allowing us to be here tonight.
Technology is neutral. It's like money. It's what we bring to it.
Yes.
If we look at the Bermuda Grenada Treaty, if that was true, when the Palladians say to Eisenhower, you give up your nuclear weapons, we will give you share some technology with you, but you have to give up your nuclear weapons, and we'll show you how to raise your spirituality. And Eisenhower said, no. No, I can't do that. Now, I'm not saying he was wrong or right. I would hate to have to make that decision as a leader of the free world. But no, we can't do that. We have too many enemies. We have Wall Street. I can't do that. But then this species of grays, not all grays, because there are many species of grays, they come, and he makes the treaty with them. And so the technology was neutral, but I don't want to use it to create zero-point energy. So we have free energy. I don't want to use it to make the crooked places straight and the rough places smooth. I want to use it for a drone. I want to use it to make laser weapons. That's what I want to use it to. It's not the technology's fault. It's our consciousness is not mature enough. These space-age brothers and sisters who come, a lot of them are deeply spiritual, and they make good use of technology. So it's not the technology. It's us.
Right. It's how we use it.
Because of fear.
Absolutely. I mean, it has everything to do with fear. And, you know, it can. Do you feel, here's a question for you from, and we might have talked about this on the last show, but I don't know what I feel about this, honestly. Is the feeling that some higher race of some kind, or a higher alien race will save us in some ways? Like, what's going on with the missile silos is an example, how, you know, I saw that captain, his name is Salas, I think is his last name, and I want to get him on this show, actually. He's really interesting. He witnessed that there were these UFOs by the missile silos, and they activated the missiles, and then they shut them down. And so do you think that there are helpers for us? Do you think that they can help us? Because there seems to be some evidence of that.
I think this, and and he's in this book, Solace, UFOs and Nukes by Robert Hastings.
Uh-huh,
I don't think so. Now I have a good friend of mine, an energy healer, Rosemary Starr. We talk about that, and I don't think, and I'll tell you why. I feel that part of living in a universe where you reap what you sow and karma and what have you is that you have to be accountable.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel that those displays are showing us that, you know, this is dangerous what you're doing. But I feel that for me to depend on a cavalry to come at the last minute because myself or my species screwed up really bad, I don't think that's mature. And I could be wrong. And you know what? If I was wrong, I would be delighted to be wrong. But I think that as a species, if we make our beds, we have to lie in them because planets have destroyed themselves before.
Yes.
Civilizations, ET civilizations, according to some literature about UFOs and their occupants, some of them say, you know, we made the same mistakes you did. But we got away. Some people got away. So I don't, you know, just like I feel I don't need a savior, whether it's Jesus or anybody else, I can't live my life based on someone else will come and save me. Because then where's the accountability? I can do whatever I want because Santa Claus will come and save me. Space brothers will come.
There is
and,
that.
And it
becomes your only hope. And,
well, it's not
and
even that.
You don't necessarily act. Well, it can change the way people act.
And it's conflicting stories, see, because there are some, well, I've heard that this has been on Star Trek, but maybe that's where they got the notion from. But there's some, if you read some channel material or you read some what contactees have gotten, that we cannot interfere.
Mm-hmm. The non-intervention.
We can't interfere in another planet's politics
right.
or what have you, even though obviously some do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be shutting down nukes. But you know, we can get, well, this is what Allies of Humanity is saying. We can help you as allies and give you information, but if you're hell-bent on destroying yourself, well, hey, man, good night. So I'd like to be wrong, but I when I get up in the morning, I'm just trying to say I am responsible. And if I mess up, I have to. That's not saying we don't have guides and helpers, visible and invisible. But if I jump off the roof, no one's going to stop me. Hey man, don't do
right.
that. You shouldn't do that. You got a whole life to go. So
yeah,
I hope that answered your question.
No, it does. It's a topic that comes up often. And, you know, if you think about it, even on the Earth itself, I've had experts on this program who've presented remarkable evidence of past civilizations that have destroyed themselves. Atlantis, there's a lot of evidence. I had the guy who's done, he's just done a whole bunch of research on that. And where did these civilizations do fade? I think we have a tendency to believe we're always going to be here forever. You know, every civilization feels that way. Even the country, you know, that the United States is going to last for indefinitely. And that history doesn't bear that out. I mean, that, you know, civilization.
No, empires crumble. And if the U.S., we can see signs of it crumbling now.
Oh, yes.
And
look at the
it'll
infrastructure.
Just the moral and ethical dilemmas that
too.
We choose. That's what I'm speaking more of, but yeah, we see signs of it. When the U.S., if it begins to crumble, and it's for many reasons, it's not Obama's fault, as some people want to say, but we will be the most short-lived empire.
Yeah.
200 years, 250 years is not that long a time as far as history goes. We're not talking like, you know, the centuries of Rome and Babylon and those empires, the Sumerian Empire. You know, we're just talking about the United States of America.
Well,
the biggest
problem we have in this country, I mean, it's the influence. I think I don't have it in front of me. I actually heard this. I think I might have heard this on a different radio show. But just how little impact the average citizen. There was a study done at some university. And it was out in the news recently that we have so little impact, really, over the direction of the country as voters, because the influence of money is incredibly strong in this country, and it's changing. I mean, it really influences everything. I mean, even where we talked about technology, I couldn't help but think about even the medical profession. How we're not really curing things anymore. You just manage it because that brings in more money. And it sounds like a conspiracy when you say that, but you know what? These companies, they are in business to make money. And I even read an article about how, you know, that some of these diseases, they're not going to invest in treating them because it's not profitable. So, you know, they can't do that. But in terms of, you know, We are so wrapped up in greed and the disparities in income, that too. I mean, look at what's going on in the country and the world. the difference between the 1% and everybody else. I mean, that always is a hallmark of something nearing a collapse when
yeah.
there's such a gap.
Yeah. I mean, there's many things we can point to, but certainly that's one of them. That is one
you
of
know,
them.
I know we probably won't stay in overtime forever, but, you know, there was something we didn't get to address in the live show, which brings us all the way back to the topic we started with, but it really did have an impact on me. And I'll even tell you a little story since we're in the podcast. I had an experience, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, where I was in a store where nowadays, of course, there's electronic surveillance everywhere. And a scarf got caught on a bag. I was carrying all this stuff. It was before I went to L.A., and I had bought a dress, so I hardly ever buy anything for myself. But that day, I needed to get ready for this conference, and I needed some new clothes. And so I had, like, a hook, you know, like a hanger. And
yeah.
I had walked through this area, very tight shelves, and apparently a scarf got caught on a hanger. As I was going up the escalator, and it was actually dragging behind me as best I could tell. Well, I got upstairs to I needed a new little coffee maker, just an inexpensive one, and I was looking at that, and I realized, oh my God, this scarf was caught partway, you know, it was caught on my hanger. And so I took it off, and, you know, lo and behold, fairly quickly, here comes this guy. And he just said, you know, can I help you? And he looked at me like, I know he was watching. But here's the deal. This is what I'm entering into here. I read this article, and there have been a lot of articles online about white privilege. I really do believe that gentleman was a security guy. I just know he was. And, you know, anyone can, there can be shoplifters of any race, for sure. But the thing is if I had been a person of color, I really believe I would have been treated differently. He didn't treat me awfully. I mean, I even said, you know, this got caught on my bag, and I gave it, you know, I brought it up to the cash register. But anyway, I just had this feeling, Michael, if I hadn't been, you know, middle-aged white woman with a credit card buying, you know, with all these packages, whatever, I would have been treated completely differently. Completely differently. And a friend of mine agreed.
It's very possible. It's very possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I felt self-conscious. I mean, honestly, it was kind of a multi-tiered experience because even as a middle-aged white female, I really felt, in a way, this feeling of being watched. I mean, that you can't, I mean, it felt awful to me, but it could have
yeah.
been even worse. I mean, what if I'd left
yeah.
the store by accident? You know, I could have very easily and not have seen it. And then if I'd been a
yeah.
person of color, you can bet I would have gotten in trouble. Now, I don't know what they would have done to me as, you know, but it's these articles. And there's one you raised. It was actually a link off another article you had sent me, Peggy McIntosh's analysis of
white
privilege. Oh, it just goes
yeah.
on and on. And it's
yeah.
really interesting. It is so eye-opening. And, you know, I can't even go through the whole list. I mean, it's 50 things. And it really makes you realize that life is different. Life
yeah.
is different for people of color, and
it's
really scary just how different.
It is.
And we don't realize it. We don't live it every day.
And that's why it's hard to believe. Yeah, yeah.
And you do.
And so, yeah, I do. I just choose to handle it in my way, and
yeah.
I try to do things to keep myself healthy and, you know, mentally and physically and spiritually. That's the only way I know to combat it without self-destructing. You had asked me, I remember, you know, you had posted something. about
yeah,
and you wanted
me
to share. I'll share it with you very quickly. I don't know, time is running out. This has been several occasions. The first occasion was when I was very young, and I was a teenager in high school, and a friend of mine's dad had an Eldorado Cadillac, and it was white with red interior, and it was a convertible. And he was a lawyer, and we were riding in Owings Mills, Maryland, which was a predominantly white area, and it was four of us. And we went out to dinner, and he let his son have the car. And we got stopped. And the police, well, we didn't turn around. They said, if you turn around, we're going to blow your head off.
Oh,
you
my
just
gosh.
Stay there. And they came over, and they just, because they saw us driving this Cadillac.
Yes.
And it was very, it was traumatic. We couldn't even turn around. And one of them had a gun on us in the back, and two came on the side, asked for driver's license, registration, that kind of thing. Then, many, 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 many years later, I was in New York, and I was walking at the, I don't know if you've been to New York, but the Barnes & Noble was that huge one on Broadway between 82nd and 83rd. I had on a bomber jacket, pair of jeans, it was chilly, it was a nice fall day. Two cops pull their car over, screech up to the curb, tell me not to move.
Oh, gosh.
And tell me to get up against the wall. This is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They go through my pockets. They pat me down. They say there was a bank robbery up on 125th Street. And the suspect was wearing a bomber jacket. And I was feeling a lot of things. And they said, don't cause a scene. I don't cause a scene. They pulled their guns. And I got and so they went in my pocket. They couldn't find anything. They got a call on the radio, and then they left. They didn't say sorry, whatever. So people are looking
not
at
even,
me,
uh-huh.
And so I got one of the officers' names, and the precinct was two blocks from my home. So I went there and I complained, and the woman behind the desk said, "I don't know why you're here. Nothing's going to happen." And I said, "Well, I just want to do it anyway." Just that I didn't do anything to stand up for myself.
No, I
about
think that's
about three, 4 months,
good.
You know, and then that next summer, I was about five blocks from my home. A police cruiser pulls up to me, follows me down the street, and asks me to get into the car because they need some people for a lineup. I said, "Are you kidding me, man?
Oh, my gosh.
Are you kidding me?"
They said,
"Don't get smart. We'll bring you. Just come on. We need some people for a lineup." I said, "I don't think so."
Oh my gosh! And then what happened? They let you go?
They were following me. They followed as I was walking.
Yeah, but I mean, when you said, "I don't think so," what happened then?
they kept. They talked to themselves for a minute. I kept walking and kept watching them, and then they just pulled away.
They weren't going to deal with it, but that's outrageous. I have never heard anything like that happen.
Now, hear me. All policemen are not this way.
No, and I know that, and I like to say that too.
But I want the audience to hear that. I'm not.
It's important.
But there are many. But the other day I was at the gym, and this was when the Ferguson thing was really hot and heavy.
Yeah.
And I noticed I just got out of the pool, and I went, and I saw a guy. He had the locker open, and there was a 9mm there, and I was like, "Well, that's an interesting thing." And then when he moved, it was a cop, and so, they read the papers. I read the papers. He was very friendly to me. He said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm okay. I just got out of the pool. I don't mean to scare." So we talked, but I could tell that he was probably thinking, I don't know, but I felt he was probably thinking what I was thinking, that everybody's not like this. You read the paper, I read the paper. You're a white cop with your 9mm. You're getting ready to go work out. I just got through swimming. We're human beings. So we chatted, and then I saw them the next day. It was a younger guy. He was with a different cop, and they were just, and, we talked, and I just said, "You be careful out there." And he said, you be careful out there too. I said, believe me, I will. And it was just like that. Oh, maybe I'll see him tomorrow. But it was just this unspoken. I could just feel it that, hey, it's all good. Hope you're having a good day too. And I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. But it's a shame that, you know, maybe we would have, I know I would have said that anyway to him, and maybe he would to me too. But we made a special extra, you know, connection. Because he's a cop, I'm a man of color. And even if it was just a pleasantry, it was our humanity.
It still matters.
Yeah.
It still matters. And, you know, I relate to this in a way because where there is this feeling, even beyond being people of color, that, you know, there's this fear in the communities right now because of the militarization and misuse sometimes of power. And, you know, some things are unethical, but, you know, there can be wonderful things. I recently, you know, I was at a community gathering and a police officer I know in my community who came back from some training, I mean, I gave him a big hug. I mean, because you know, we're human beings. And even though there is all this fear stuff going on in the world, and even though there can be unethical behavior, it all comes down to our humanity. I love that. Because that's what matters, is we have to connect to each other as human beings.
Yeah, we do. But you also have to be able to hear other people's stories, too. And,
and
hear what I'm
saying. Oh, that too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I agree.
Because I know sometimes a lot of times, especially with white brothers and sisters around race, the first thing they want to go to is, what can we do? And sometimes you don't have to do anything. Just listen to what I'm saying. Just be there.
Yeah.
Just hold me in that moment. Because if we rush to do, then we don't have to feel. Because it's hard to feel that injustice. It's hard to feel, well, yeah, this is a member of my tribe who did this, and I'm ashamed. Or maybe I'm not ashamed. Maybe I'm just angry. What we do sometimes in our trainings is, because there's some people say, well, the police don't do that. They're my friends. And, you know, black people, they commit most of the crimes, and they don't have a lot of – they're absent from their families, you know, all these stereotypes. And that's the resistance. And so a lot of times as a trainer, I'll say, okay, even though stats don't bear that out, so I just say, well, imagine just for a moment if it was true. Now, how does that make you feel? That way you don't get to wiggle out of it. Let's just say for a moment that what they're saying, like, what if someone said to me, well, I don't have that experience with the police, Michael, you sure you didn't do something? Or maybe, you know, black males do blah, blah, blah. And I would just say, okay. Because now you're not hearing me. You're not letting me have my experience. And that's what's the most frustrating. Because basically what you're saying is, I'm lying. Or I caused this. I brought this on myself. And nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
You know. So a lot of times when we get that kind of resistance, not all trainers, but some, it's okay, let's say what Michael says is not true. Okay, all right, you don't believe it. But let's say it was true. What would change for you?
Yes.
And then we get to it.
Yes.
We have other exercises that we do, and some people got angry. One exercise we do is we have the people of color on one side, and we'll have we do that after we've built some trust. That may not happen the first day. But one of the exercises we do is we'll have people of color, and we'll have our European-American brothers and sisters, and we'll say, what do you like about being Cherokee or African or African-American or whatever? And we'll write down. Some people say, I love our sense of style. I love our resilience historically. I love our cuisine, you know. But when we ask our white brothers and sisters, they'll say, well, I like not having to wait in line at such and such a restaurant. Or
oh my gosh.
I like that I can... move in this neighborhood or whatever. No, but basically what I'm trying to say is at the end of the exercise, all of the things, and this has happened over and over and over again, all of the things that the European American likes about being white, all around issues of power.
Wow.
I like that I don't get followed when I go into department stores. I like, or you know, and Chris Rock did this at a concert. He said, I'm a man of color.
Yeah.
How many white people out there would like to change places with me? I have all the money I want. I can have any woman I want. And how many of y'all would like, and they wouldn't raise their hands.
Wow.
No white person raised their hands, which means that white brothers and sisters know that people of color are not being treated fairly. I wouldn't even trade places with you.
Uh-huh.
So that's a very telling
question.
Telling. Yeah.
That is really telling because, like,
yeah.
it's...
Chris Rock did this several years ago. I have all the money I want.
That's really interesting.
All the women I can have. How many white people out there would change places with me? None of them raised their hand. So it must be something really, really good about being white. Must be something really good about that. And these are not things that we're making up because it's issues of power. And, you know, and you don't know it because you didn't ask for it. You were raised this way. No one comes out saying, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out, well, not many people. I'm going to go out here and I'm just going to make somebody's day miserable because nobody does because of the color of their skin. Nobody. But you don't know that because it's like a fish being out of water. You don't know you're out of water until you can't breathe. It's just normal. When my sister, what she would say, she had to buy pantyhose, and she would say she would look for flesh color, but they weren't the color of her flesh.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah, see,
her,
that's
her,
subtle.
See, because it wasn't normative. That's not normative.
Uh-huh.
You see.
Although,
you
honestly,
know, you can,
like you say, I mean, in terms of percentages in the United States, that actually is more so. And yet, like, that's not the way it's presented, though. I mean,
she couldn't find it because that's not normative. You can, it's
right.
Even in our language, you can tell a damn, you can tell a little white lie, but you won't tell a damn black lie. Angel's food cake is, I'm serious, angel's food cake is white. Devil's food cake is chocolate. It's subtle. But,
wait, that,
you know what
that
I mean? The only time black is kind of a good thing is when financially when you're in the black.
Oh, gosh. You know, there was a story.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, there was a story on, I think I saw this one. I don't know where I did. I saw this story, Michael, where this really, this one got me, where I don't know what she, it was a professional mother, black mother. She lived in a nice community, and they were going out of town. This was just on the internet, I don't know, last couple of days. And she told the story of how she actually went to her local police department because they were some of the only black people in their entire neighborhood and told them, we're going out of town, and my sons are going to be walking through the neighborhood, and they normally do not, because apparently she normally drove them to school, or I don't know how, I think these were like young teens or something. I'm not sure how old they were, but they must have been a little bit older. And she was so concerned that they would be singled out, which given the history of things that have happened in this country, that could happen. Told some, and she said, how many white parents, when they have to go on vacation, they tell the police, you know, that's not even an issue, right? And so she was highlighting, see, this is what it's like. And her fear as a mother, every time her sons would go out, especially her sons, you know, just if they'd be caught in the wrong situation and what it was like. And it really, it did reach me. That really got to me. And you know, I think you're right, Michael, that there is this knowing, kind of just an overall knowing, but when you really start hearing the details, it just really sinks in. And, you know, it's really awful to think that people, you know, that we can't, what can we do, you know, to, I know that, that's, I just asked the question, that, see, I fell into it. I mean, because there is this view, I guess all we can do is one, each one of us at a time, be aware, because when will the change come? I mean, you know,
it's, the change comes when we change. And like you said,
yes.
And you, the change just came. I can't do anything about that. Okay, I can't do anything about that. I'm sitting here. It's 11:30 almost. I'm just hanging out. I'm enjoying this, and I got it. You know, I'll go to the church tomorrow. But what I can send good thoughts. I can pray. I can do whatever. But what I can do is tomorrow, everybody that I encounter, including myself, I can just remember to treat them with the dignity and respect as a child of God or non-God or whatever. That's all you can do. Because getting caught up in trying to change the world, it doesn't work that way. I use the example, Jesus did not change the world. Not in that sense. But his spirituality did.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to change. That's going to happen. I can't do anything. Russia... I don't know what Putin is doing, but it doesn't look good. I can't change that, okay? But I can be an authentic, loving, and forgiving human being tomorrow, at least for part of the day. And
right.
That's all I'm required to do.
Yes. Yes.
And it's like the Serenity Prayer. Give me the wisdom to accept the things I cannot change.
Yes.
No, give me the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. That's how you have inner peace.
Yes.
You can't have inner peace by flitting around trying to put out all these fires, and most of the people trying to put out the fires, their life is a mess. But see, I don't have to focus on my life when I'm trying to focus on yours. I don't have time to look at my life because I'm trying to solve all the world's problems.
Yes. It's true.
It was Ernest Hemingway. Ernest Hemingway said he was always leery of people who were going around trying to change the world before they even knew what the world was about in the first place.
Yes.
And you got people running around doing that.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly given me a lot to think about, and the audience, and I know that out there in the podcast, this will continue to, and...
Yeah, and this is what life's about. We shared some ideas.
We did,
we didn't
and
have
I'm
to
glad.
Agree in love, but we can disagree in love, and that's all that really matters. And, and we know that we're not denigrating all. We're not saying all cops are bad. Not saying all white brothers is bad.
No,
we're not saying that. And no. you know, it's the end of a perfect day, and I hope it is for you and your listeners. And just keep the faith. Don't let people tell you. Don't let the noise distract you. Be who you are, and you are love. You really are. And anything that tells you anything else, they're lying. But if you forget, that's the thing. So you can forget who you are.
Yes. Yes. That.
We're consumers.
That's the key.
Somebody called me. We're consumers. They told me today on TV. I was a consumer.
Yes. I'm a consumer.
I'm not a consumer. Yeah, but they said that. They said, and consumers out there. I'm like,
you hear
that? Is
that
all I am? I'm just a consumer.
Yeah, so they'll come up with all kinds of labels for us.
Yeah, but I
we're human beings.
Yeah, I'm a consumer.
Well, I certainly...
I'm here to consume you.
Maybe some of those aliens that you interact with, I don't know. I mean,
we're
believe
we're
the Twilight Zone, huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
is beautiful.
No, this is exactly... Actually, it was more than I could have even expected, although I had a feeling it would be like this. This is what I wanted tonight is, you know, we're not talking about the details of a book or anything. Just this is what I'd like this show. I'm going to do more of these. I want to do more of these sorts of episodes where we just talk. We just talk about things that matter. And, you know, it just comes down to love. It really does.
Yeah, and what that looks like. Because, you know, because that's what you want to know. What Cornel West said, that tenderness is love in private and justice is love in public. So what would love look like? That's what you want to say. It would look like this. It would look like that. If we had justice, we wouldn't have bashing of gays and straight people. We wouldn't have bashing of people of color and white men. We would, you know, you got to come up with what it would look like. Otherwise, it's just an abstract concept.
Yes.
What if we loved each other? What would it look like? Well, we'll look like not shooting unarmed men.
Well, I'll tell you
that's
something, Michael.
You know, I mean, you know, you just want to come up with something. Otherwise, it's just kumbaya.
Well, there's this show, I haven't scheduled the exact time yet, but next week when it comes to justice, there's this person that I know in England, and actually he's been on the show once before, a really long time ago, and he's actually the husband of an author who was on the show, and he formed a friendship with a black man on death row in the United States. And here he is, a playwright, and he was a teacher, professor, I think, in England. And he started to just correspond. And more he began to hear what life was like, what was going on with justice here. And it's become quite the thing that he has a campaign going to help. He's going to be doing a play on this entire relationship. But anyway, he's coming on this show, and we haven't gotten the exact time settled yet, but it's going to be next week. And I really hope, you know, this theme of justice, I want to continue to explore it in that way, too, in the prisons, you know, what's going on there. And so that's what I hope to do next week. And so I want to encourage the audience to just keep an eye on frontierbeyondfear.com, because this show that we're doing here tonight will be there and highlighted there for quite a while. And you can always find it in the archives. And also this upcoming show. And there will be future shows on the topic of justice, and, you know, what we can do to understand one another. That, too, is, you know, I know I was taught, come, let us reason together, but this is kind of come, let us be in a space of love together. That's my hope, and that's what this was like tonight. And I am just so thankful, Michael, that you have come into the life of this show, and really just personally as a friend, I am just, you know, that's what matters. And I just am so appreciative that you're here tonight. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. We'll do it again. We can talk about my book. I just finished my book. I'm getting it edited, and hopefully it'll be out in a few weeks.
Yes. That's perfect.
Yeah.
We will schedule you not too far out then. We'll get you back on again.
Yes,
we'll talk about
to.
Your book. I'd love to have you back on. So you're always welcome here.
Thank you very much.
So,
we'll talk soon, I hope.
Yeah, you have a wonderful night.
You too, my dear.
Take care.
Blessings
All
to
right,
you.
All right, thanks. Blessings to you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And so I will wrap up here. Just a reminder, I failed to say before Michael left, again, his website is michaeljscarter.com if you want to look into all the different things that he's doing, which are really interesting, what he's studied. It's really fascinating. And he is on Ancient Aliens, and that season will be coming up so that you can see Michael there. And he's even been on George Norrie's Beyond Belief program, so if you have Gaiam TV, that's out there, and in the Coast to Coast archives, he's been on that show, and he's been on a number of radio shows, so I am just so happy that Michael was here with us tonight and even into overtime. So with that said, do keep an eye on the schedule, frontierbeyondfear.com. And whenever this show finds you, I hope this show's still going strong. I intend to keep it going strong for as long as I can, and keep it going in this direction of a space of love. So thank you, everyone, for being here tonight or whenever this show finds you, day or night. What a beautiful reminder that today was the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. I had known that at some level, and yet it wasn't fully in my consciousness tonight, and I'm just so glad that we are doing this show tonight. It's just a beautiful thing, and it's perfect. So everyone, be in peace wherever you are, and join us again soon. Take care, everyone. Thank you.